And then we can pray about a situation before the fact, instead of my finding out about it last night at midnight, and actually it was midnight in Tulsa, so you can see Dan's really been going quite a bit with this whole situation. The second area of prayer has to do with the daughter. I think it's the middle daughter. Needless to say, originally they had diagnosed not so serious a problem. But then she started passing blood in her urine, and they then realized that one of her kidneys had been damaged, torn from the impact. In addition to that, she has now contracted pneumonia while in the hospital. And that, of course, is common. Oftentimes, you know, you become ill, and then if you're recovering from your illness, then pneumonia sets in trying to kill you again. So if you would be praying in that situation. The people, however, in the general Tulsa area have been phenomenally supportive of this whole situation. As a matter of fact, Dan was telling me that the Cunningham family had gone about 2 years without air conditioning, and one of the men in the church, or someone who is involved in contracting or subcontracting, donated a brand new unit for their home. A new freezer has recently been given to them. New station wagon was given to them, not brand new, but at least new, to supplement the fact that they had no transportation. And then there has also been a memorial fund set up in the name of Maryland for those who want to contribute financially. I only mention that so that you can know it as a fact. What I don't want you doing is emotionally sending money there while we are suffering here. Now let's keep ourselves in perspective. However, if you are one that is able to and desire to, gifts should be sent to Patreon in the name of Marilyn Cunningham. And one man, for example, has already given $8,000 just from one source. And so the money is, he was very well known, probably because of his father. Now, as you know, his father was the well-known 1936 Olympic runner, Glenn Cunningham Sr., and when his name came up in the paper, immediately he was getting calls from reporters and individuals wanting to interview him. And so I think it's either today or tomorrow he is going to be interviewed with television coverage as to his feelings regarding this drunken driver who pulled out in front of him at 50 miles an hour. He struck the side of the van. He was doing 50, which, of course, was the limit, or at least within the realm of the limit. So it's the other person's fault, and they have been charged with vehicular homicide. How far it goes from that point on is up to the courts, of course. But you might be praying about that as well, especially as the bills now begin to mount. These operations are not cheap, and I'm sure that your first impression is, well, the other guy's got insurance. Well, we don't even know that. Okay? Right now, it's rather, the information is coming in very, very slowly. And so I'm not one to pump people for information, but I sure pumped Dan last night. And I more or less said to him, you better find out. You know, if you got any law enforcement people in your tree, well, get a written report of the whole situation, which he could do. That's public record. You can find out exactly what happened and who was arrested and thus and thus and thus. So first I heard it was a bunch of teenagers that were drunk that were in their 19 and 20-year-olds. Next I heard it was a 32-year-old man who was drunk. So if it was a couple of 16-year-olds and they were drunk, maybe that's where they got 32. I don't know. But am I close there? Okay. I watch my math, you know. The fact of the matter is there's a lot of prayer that needs to be certainly sent up with regard to the entire family. There will be in the future, and it's yet undetermined, a memorial service that will be held at Petrean. And Dan even asked me about that regarding when he thought it should be, and I said there's no time set since she's already been taken care of from the standpoint of burial in that sense. Why, it can be any time thereafter. So his feeling was that he wanted to wait until the kids were either on the mend or, in fact, able to attend so that the entire family can be there. The oldest child was there on Wednesday night, last night, Bible class, and that, of course, was quite uplifting to the congregation. And Ruth is there, that is Ruth Cunningham, his mother, and she'll probably be there for the duration. She'll stay there as long as she has to. As you know, she's retired, so there's no commitments that she has regarding work and so on. Many things are, Dan was saying, you know, week at camp, highlights, excitement, and then you come back to this. And, of course, that's the way it is. And that's what life is all about, ups and downs, ups and downs. And you just take it in stride and realize that God is still on the throne. Well, let's get into our study. We have to do something with these conspirators. We want to open up the ground and swallow them up and then move on to the next area of conspiracy. Let's begin by looking to the Lord in a few moments of silent prayer. Our Father, we're grateful and thankful for the time before us again to study thy word. We're mindful of situations of life that attempt to distract us, as well as to bring sorrow. And yet we realize that life goes on, and thou hast a plan and purpose for us, and we're here to learn more and more, be in tune with that plan. Therefore, we look to thee for information from thy truth this evening. In Christ's name, amen. You notice I gave you a little longer than usual for silent prayer. You had that time to pray about, one, finances, and two, the Cunningham situation. If you didn't, you missed an excellent opportunity. Numbers chapter 16. This was a question tonight, by the way, on Jeopardy. Matter of fact, it was the big question. What book of the Bible is named after the Greek word arithmi? Of course, they said it funny. Arithmo or something, moi or some dumb thing like that. And I immediately opted for Deuteronomy because, you see, that's a numerical concept. But then I thought, wait a minute, and my wife said numbers. And of course, it was too simple then, because numbers, the Greek word arithmi, is where we get our English word arithmetic from, and that, as you know, is a... I was getting involved with the doubling of the numbers, trying to think like somebody who would really try to trip people up, but then I realized the subject was Bible. Most people don't know anything about it, and so they all got it, by the way. Numbers. Give you time to find it. Number 16. All right, the conspiracy again begins with four, ends up with three. Again, the perfect pattern in keeping with our particular subject of revolution and conspiracy. And that, of course, that it begins with a small group, a plot. And the plot in this case actually comes out in the course of the discussion between Moses Korah. And in verse 3, we have what the plot is all about. The plot is basically, one, to
overthrow Moses' authority over them. With two, based on an assumption. And you see, the assumption brings a faulty conclusion which develops the plot. Now, I mentioned this last night. I'm going to reiterate it this evening. Only this time I'm going to make it a little stronger. I'm going to add a warning to it. Be very, very careful when anyone ever approaches you to enter into any kind of a conspiracy, first of all. Secondly, if you smell conspiracy and an attempt to overthrow any God-given authority, get out of that situation as quickly as possible. And we're going to see that a little bit later on. It is simply phrased in terms such as, in other words, those that don't want to die, they'd better get away from Korah, Abiram, and Dathan. Don't go near their tents. And we'll see that under the simple doctrine of come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. It is also a part of progressional and or experiential sanctification. There are certain things that we as believers should never get ourselves involved with. And one of them is conspiratorial activities, whether it be crusader arrogance or criminal arrogance. And generally you'll generally find that crusader arrogance leads to criminal arrogance. And that includes all this nonsense that's going on right now by misdirected, arrogant believers trying to impose Christian standards upon unbelievers. You'll never do it. Learn a principle early in your Christian life. You cannot legislate morality. You cannot legislate morality. Nor can you legislate submissiveness. You just can't do it. Why? Because in both cases, a very important and integral part of the construction of man's mind is used. It's called volition. And if a person says no to a thing, or says yes to a thing, and they're determined to do it, they're going to do it. And that's one of the problems that we're having in this country regarding an attempt to legislate things that government should have never gotten into, and at the same time, making it so confusing that our courts are absolutely boggled with court cases that will never be resolved if they were alive for 100 years. And in some cases, criminals are walking free through that whole plea bargaining system, and whereas innocent people are being abused by that very same system. And the reason for it is because today everything is relative. Everything depends upon the interpretation of one person over the other, or one law enforcement agent over the other. And with all of the bureaucracies we have in our country today, it's a wonder that it even functions, that is, at all. And so they're arguing now about manufacturing production, and that we're now a second-rate country, and we no longer produce what we used to produce, and so on. And it's all based on the fact that there are such stringent rules placed upon manufacturers that they simply can't do what they used to do as easily because of regulation. Or having to hire people that aren't qualified because they fit into a certain economic and or racial strata. That's nonsense. Now, I'm all for equal opportunity because this country was based on equal opportunity. But it was never based on equality. There's a vast difference between equal opportunity and equality. Equality is to bring everyone to an equal plane. And the only way you can do that is to find the lowest common denominator. Think of it. You can never bring equality to the highest common denominator. You can't bring a person from an IQ of 40 to an IQ of 180. So you have to come up with some mean figure. So you bring everyone down to that low level. And it's appalling that government thinks now that they have to think for us to protect ourselves. And that's being exhibited by a simple little thing, by not allowing a coach to sit on the third baseline in a wheelchair because he might get hurt. Well, don't you think that coach has enough sense to know whether or not he feels responsible enough that if a ball is coming at him, to either duck, put his hands up, or get out of the way? So they're trying to ban him from being in the coach's box at third base because he's in a wheelchair. And I understand that his team is playing an elimination game tonight for the state championship. So it'll be held in the courts. Another thing to boggle the courts with incidentals. More stupidity. Same thing with the helmet laws. As far as wearing a helmet while riding a motorcycle. You say, well, don't you think that a person riding a motorcycle should wear a helmet? Absolutely. I wouldn't get on one without one. But I want to be able to make that decision. I don't want government telling me that I'm so stupid that I can't think for myself to put a helmet on my head. And, furthermore, if I am stupid enough not to, then I'll suffer the consequence. And maybe become one of the stats. I'm being a bit irritated, and I'm well PO'd about having a ring put through my nose and being led by big government. I'm sick of big government. And I don't see any future, by the way, with that regard, because with both of them, you're going to have tentacles of monstrosities being born out of our current system. Both of them. So don't ask me who I'm going to vote for. I'm going to close my eyes and punch a hole in the paper. I'll probably miss both of them. And if I thought it would do any good to keep going like this, I would do it. I remember one time a person came up to me with a Democratic ticket and handed me the whole thing and said, here, who would you vote for? And I said, none of the above. Don't ever do that to me. I am not your conscience or your guide. You do based on what you think is right. That's what our whole system is all about. And I don't mean in your own eyes, based on your convictions as extrapolated from the Word of God. That's like this other gal that came to me years ago and said, do you think I have the gift of celibacy? I took one look at her and I said, no. And she said, why? And I said, do you like boys? She said, yes. I said, yeah, and you don't have the gift of celibacy. You don't even look like a celibate. I think she's on her sixth or seventh right now. I'm not sure. Four or fifth. Child, not marriage. I think the best one I ever had posed to me, though, was, you think I'll like that? Some particular food. How do I know it? Do you ever stop to think about this? How does food taste to you? Did you ever stop to think that it may not taste that same way to anybody else? In the entire world? That's obvious because people eat broccoli. And cook carrots. My wife almost turns, she almost gets ecstatic when she has string beans. That would drive me out of the kitchen. I appall those things. I love them raw, but cooked, they're an abomination. Absolute abomination. And cabbage? Ugh. I want to know who had a problem when I walk in the room when it's cooking. Well, get that dog out of here. Well, it wasn't the dog, dear. Well, then you better leave. Because I know it wasn't me. No, we're going to have that for supper. Oh, great. And anything that smells that bad, I'm sorry. I've got to get past the smell. Well, enough said. Let's get back to conspiracy. You've gone far enough, they said in verse 3. For all the congregation are holy. Oh, really? See, there's their first false assumption. Second, and every one of them, second false assumption. Not that there are holy people in the congregation, but all of them are holy. What an illusion. But don't you see, conspiracy always has as its basic motivation arrogance, which results in illusions of grandeur, both for themselves and for others. Listen carefully to the chicken in every pot that's coming out of Arkansas, for example. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And then on the other side of the spectrum is Bush. And I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. And why hasn't he done it up till now? You see? And then the other guy comes in and he says, and I have a plan that will revolutionize this country. Never reveal the plan. This morning's paper said it's going to come out pretty soon, but he prefaces it by saying, I don't think there's any hope for this nation economically. It's rather sad news. Dark commentary of our future. That was Perot. Some of you had your whole life built upon Perot. Forget that stuff. Told you something bothered me about him. Told you that right from the beginning. Guess what? I was right. He's even being sued, I heard the other day, by some of his supporters because he let them down. Listen, the man never said he was even a what? A candidate. What are they going to sue him for? Breathing? Making a few comments in public? Speaking of comments in public, I have to voice my opinion regarding this one. The vice president is interviewed on the Larry King Show last evening in New York City. He is asked a hypothetical question with regard to abortion and his own daughter. And he prefaces his answer by making it very clear that it is a hypothetical question. I was glad to hear that. And in fact, should have said, but didn't, I cannot give an actual answer to a hypothetical question. That was his first mistake. But nevertheless, he went on and tried to hypothesize what he might do in a given situation. And he said, if my daughter became pregnant and wanted an abortion, I would sit down and counsel with her, all right? And I would try to dissuade her from getting one. And then King interrupted and said, but suppose she determined to get one. He said, well, then I would have to obviously go along with her wishes. Boom! He's pro-abortion. Boom! He's changed his whole frame of thinking with regard to the abortion issue. Everybody's running around, including that jackass governor of New York, saying what's obvious now, he's pro-choice. Hypothetical question? A hypothetical question? And I would counsel her? And I would have to go along with her wishes? What's the alternative? Kill her? See? Where's the logic in this country? And these are the people that were going to be our leaders. Oy vey! Oh, you don't understand that, do you? Oh, you do? Okay. Golly gee! Or they'd say in the Deep South, damn. We're in bad shape, folks. Yeah, the best we can crank up is somebody who can't even understand the English language. I understood exactly what he meant. What he was saying, in effect, was I have to deal with the situation if it arises. And then I'd certainly have to go along with the desires of my daughter. Why? Why? Because that's what she would do anyway. Do you understand? What are you going to do, lock her up? Chain her to a bed? It's kind of kinky. I'm going to read it now. Vice President chains daughter to bed for 9 months so she can deliver. Boy, could the Inquirer have fun with that one. Do you ever stop to think, folks, that when your children get old enough to make decisions for themselves, you have no right other than advice? Because you know what?
They're going to do it anyway. Right? Now, son, don't take that gun into town.
And don't let your children grow up to be cowboys either. Hey, we got saturated with that stuff. You can't go anyplace in Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas. That whole area, ding, 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 ding. Man, we were stepping on more cats. And you'd hear, meow, meow, meow. Had more fun. The only thing, I wish that Bob was with us. When Moses heard this verse 4, he fell right over on his face, broke out a few teeth, broke his nose, and he spoke to Korah. Now, this is an expression. It's really idiomatic.
It means that he fell in a prayerful situation.
Verse 5. Tomorrow morning, the Lord will show who is his and who is holy. And he will bring near to himself even the one whom he will choose. He will bring near to himself. Now we have a contest. The contest is, in fact, who's right and who's wrong. Here's the beauty of this thing. Moses knew he was right. There's no question that he knew he was right. Why? Because he had been ordained by God to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt at the appointed time. He'd already suffered for 40 years for not having done it. Remember, he spent 40 years on the backside of the desert. His life is kind of in a series, you understand. 40 years, 40 years, and 40 years. 40 years he's growing up. 40 years in the backside of the desert. 40 years in the wilderness. He dies at 120. Prematurely. It says he was still of strength and full age. In other words, he still had it. So back then, 120 was not as it would be today. Think of a 120-year-old man today. He would look like, Charlton Heston as a raisin. Just all shriveled up. Most men at 120 today are not the picture of vitality, you understand. Especially leading anybody. Generally, they have to be carried from one point to the other, if they're even alive at that point. So he's already gone through 40 years of judgment, 40 years of discipline. And then finally, God says, now's the time. You think he's going to turn from this? But notice he doesn't become belligerent. He doesn't say, hey, God appointed me. Come here. And knock him down. No, no. No, no. He lets the Lord take care of the situation. Lesson number one. Many times in our lives, we are able, in fact, it's so easy for us to take matters into our own hands. But for you as a believer, remember, you follow a much higher code. The Royal Family Honor Code, especially when it deals with other believers. Don't you ever use violence. And just leave them in the hands of the Lord. He'll take care of the situation. And you think you could have done better than what's going to happen to these three? You think that you could have done better as to what's going to happen to the 250? You think you could have done better than what God will eventually do to the 14,700 that rally around the 250 who had been conspired against by the three? No. And you see, Moses can stand back absolutely guiltless. He never lifted a hand against any of them. He just simply said, let's see whom the Lord has chosen. You say the people are holy. You say that we've taken too much upon ourselves. You say that I've made myself Lord over you. Now let's see what the Lord says. What should have been, let me give you an alternative. What should have been, as a leader, Korah's rightful approach? If he didn't like the way things were going, if they weren't going according to the way he thought they should go, he should have been able to, number one, go to the same Lord that Moses goes to. In your case, you have that prerogative. And if he was being led of God, as Moses was, God would have communicated to him somehow and said, you better back off because Moses is my man and you're out of line. But see the arrogance of this thing? I'm going to take matters into my own hands. I'm going to deliver. I'll be the emancipator. See? Guys, really the foundation of all cults. Right. Korah is a type of Antichrist. That's something you never thought of before. Why is he a type of Antichrist? Because Moses is a type of Christ. How is he a type of Christ? He's their emancipator. He's their physical deliverer. He is the one that God has appointed. As a matter of fact, he was appointed from birth. As our Lord was. Now Moses failed. He didn't accomplish the totality, the purpose for which he had been designed. But nevertheless, let's not take away from what Moses did during the years of accomplishment. There's no doubt in my mind we're going to see Moses in eternity. And there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to see Moses with rewards. Even though he suffered what we might consider the ultimate defeat, not being able to take the children of Israel into the promised land. That doesn't excuse the fact that he had reached maturity. It doesn't excuse the fact that he was being led of the Spirit of God. But there's no question that Korah is absolutely out of line. Dathan is out of line. Abiram, out of line. And yet they are in cahoots with each other so that they are hell-bent, if you please, to overthrow Moses. And in fact, they're anti-Christ because they're attempting to overthrow God's authority in their life. So you cannot call these men friends of God. They're enemies of the cross, as is mentioned in the New Testament. You're going to be confronted with people like this. That's why I'm taking so much time with this material. You're going to meet people like this in life as a Christian. They're not interested in you. They don't care what you really feel. It's their motives that they want to perform, but they can't do it without some power. And so you have to be convinced that they're right. And you'd be surprised how many people, after they've used whoever they've used, just drop them, because now they've accomplished that which they wanted to accomplish. You were just simply a pawn. And as you know, pawns are what? Expendable. I play chess with people. They don't care how many pawns they lose. They just throw them out there like exactly as they are, pawns. Now, the way I look at it, when I play chess, I use them strategically. If I lose one, I better get something back for it. That's my Greek mind. I lose a pawn, I want a bishop. I lose a pawn, I want a rook. I'm not just going to lose a pawn. But I've also lost a lot of games because people will just throw these things out. I say, I don't see where he gets anything out of this. And he's setting me up in another part of the table completely. Diversionary moves. I love the game. Haven't played it in years, but I love the game. I think I quit playing seriously after I beat a young man here at Westside who was going on to be state champion. And he was really arrogant about it. I said, how good are you? And I beat him three straight. He wouldn't talk to me for months. He eventually left the church. Kid was good, but he wasn't an adult. You know, when you're 12 or 13 years old, you may think you're good. But a person 40 who's played all that time is a bit better. That's one of the fallacies of being a teenager. You think you're God's gift to creation. Then you hit your 20s and you see what a nothing you really are. And then it takes you 30 to 40 to build up something to where you can be something. By the time you're 50, you may have accomplished it, or you're too old to do anything anymore. And by 60, you quit. Another poor commentary of Average Citizen USA. All right, so now tomorrow will come. And what happens? Well, I'm not going to go into the putting the fire in the censers and so on, because the significance of that is really not relevant. It is to one extent, but not as to what I want to bring out in our lesson. And so he goes to Kor, verse 8, and he says, now, you sons of Levi, hear. And isn't it enough for you that God separated you from the rest of the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord, to stand before the congregation and minister to them? And that he brought you near, Kor, and all your brothers, sons of Levi, with you? Are you also seeking to be the priests? There's the real intent. See, that's why I suggested to you the other evening that here they're sitting and they're attending and ministering, serving, doing their jobs. And they didn't like the idea that their names were not in candles, in lights. There wasn't some flashing neon, see, saying Korah's the greatest. And his two sidekicks, Dathan and Abiram. None of that. The priests seemed to be the ones that were always in the place of prominence. They were the ones that people talked about. You know, did you hear that message that priest so-and-so gave us the other day? Yeah, wasn't that great? This guy's sitting there listening, see? Because he's an attendant. Somehow I'm not getting any of that praise. Wants to muscle in on some of the glory. What it boils down to. I love these passages, by the way, because, you know, circumstances change, times change, but people don't. So we're not assembling a tabernacle every night. But we got people working on a daily basis. And you either do it as unto the Lord, or please, do yourself a favor, quit. And go somewhere else and bitch. If you can't do your job as unto the Lord, and I don't care what it is, whether it be serving as a deacon, serving as a subordinate in the chain of command, serving as a prep school teacher, serving in whatever capacity, quit. because you're more hurt than you are good. Give it up. Be honest with yourself. Go to the person and say, who's ever in charge, I've been fooling you and fooling everyone else. I'm not happy in what I'm doing. I resign. Good. Do it. I have more respect for a person like that than one that sits behind the scenes and all they do is conspire. Or mumble under their breath about what a great job they're doing and nobody's paying attention to them. And a man that was ticked off here because I never gave recognition to accomplishments when people did things. Well, here's what I know. If you get rewards here, you got nothing on the other side. Okay? So you're walking around with a chest full of medals. Big deal. I want to see you in that day for eternity with a chest full of medals. Some, of course, have gone empty-headed through their entire life, and they'll go empty-headed throughout eternity. You understand? Nothing on their head, no crown, no reward, nothing. Why? Because they couldn't do what they did with joy. And if somebody approaches you and asks you, if a deacon comes up to you and says, by the way, I'm making up a list for whatever, this is the whatever list, can I put you on it? And if I hear anybody here start that doctrine of privacy stuff, you're going to hear a message on doctrine of privacy that you never heard in your life. And I'm going to intrude into all your privacy, including yours. That's not doctrine of privacy. That's simply a request on the part of one individual member of Westside Bible to another individual member of Westside Bible. We had this jerk here years ago, used to stand around here and criticize all the work that was done on the building, never drove a nail into the building, and yet when he was asked to come down and give advice, apparently he thought he had it, he says, oh, that's an intrusion on the doctrine of my privacy. I want to drive a nail right into his skull. But I see, I can't do that. So he sniffed and snorted his way out of here. Jerk. I've been around here long enough, I've seen all the jerks. And it won't be long, we're going to get some more. Because as soon as you start advancing, as soon as you come up with great ideas, as soon as there are innovative thoughts coming through, and we begin to advance, boom! The jerks come in and try to disturb it. Think their ideas are so good. They don't even know what they're talking about. Can't even think, much less suggest. We'll get them. Relax. But don't you get disturbed. And don't let that in any way dissuade you from the purpose for which you've been designed. You do your work. And you do it with joy. Or else, set it aside. In all honesty. You don't have the right mental attitude, you're not fooling anybody but yourself. So he summons them. And he sends information to Dathan and Abiram, and they said, we're not coming. Verse 12. Listen to verse 13. It is not enough that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey, and to have us die in the wilderness. But you would also be what? Lord over us. Here's their complaint. See, they had said that all along. One of the first things they started complaining about. You're not going to deliver us. You brought us out here to die. You're a part of the Egyptian conspiracy. Moses said, what? Where'd you get that from? God is bringing you out. If you hadn't started this murmuring and all this complaining at Meribah, we could have been in the promised land a month ago. Did you ever take a map and map out the distance between when they left Egypt, crossing over the Red Sea, and going into the promised land? How long do you think that would have taken them on foot? Any guesses? Huh? couple months? Let's give them 6 months. Okay? 6 months. Not 40 years! And you can walk around the world in 40 years! That should have been their first clue! Anybody with any sense would have said, how many miles is this? 40 years? That was their discipline. For doing what? For complaining. For complaining. Hey, the next time you complain, remember something. These things were written aforetime for our example. And we got some people here that, boy, you really have developed a beautiful whine. The police could use you. Just stick you right under the hood and you could be their siren. When you start in, boy, you start right in. And I hear it even with the children, the little ones. And they're just mimicking what you do. Oh, my. Shut up. Stifle it, cork it, you know. Whining, that's one thing I never tolerated with our kids. Forget that. Lying and whining. We didn't like the dining part either.
Oh, stop. That's whining, not whining.
Listen to yourself sometime. I start to sound like a cat in heat. Give it up. That's what they did. And then we say, how come God hasn't blessed us? Well, if you quit your whining, maybe he would. Why didn't he bless the children of Israel in their wilderness journey? 40 years, and they finally died in the wilderness, and their carcasses stunk as a reminder. Read the book of Hebrews, by the way, beginning in the 3rd chapter, and see the accounts of what is given about the children of Israel in the wilderness. And their carcasses fell, he says. Carcass. Yeah, that's the word that's used, carcass. The stench of the bodies. And then, of course, they covered much of the ground over again. Right, only the next time they come, they see the bleached bones of carcass. Weren't we here a year ago? Man, this place looks familiar. Jerry and I had an experience. I've done this before, but it's rather humbling. We're coming back from Branson, Missouri. So the girls took off. I thought we were ahead of them. Come to find out they were about an hour ahead of us. We left about the same time. We get into this one town, and it says, whatever the name of the road is, for lack of a better, I'll just say 1515A, okay? It wasn't, but that's close. So I said, well, 15A must eventually end up with... Well, anyway, I got sucked into this thing. And it was the business... No, B. 15B, meaning 15 business. Well, in most places in the world, if you're on a main highway and you hit the business district, you just simply go around and then you come back and you're on the same road again. Right? Well, not this one. This one, you go around like this, and then all of a sudden you start coming back the way you were headed. So we're driving along, and I says to Jerry, I said, you know, when we came in, that boat shop was on the right side, and now it's on the left side. We were headed toward Branson again. Then we get into another part, and we could remember all the way how to get to the place that we were staying, with the exception of those last 2 or 3 miles. And there was one little turn, and we went straight. So we're in this town, and we're driving up and down. This is about 2 o'clock in the morning. Straining our eyeballs, trying to find the entrance to this place near the White River. Well, of course, we were considerably away from the thing. My point is, we kept wandering by the same place over and over and over again. Didn't we just pass that? Yeah? Well, how come? About 30 years ago, that happened to my wife and I. We were driving across country, and it was somewhere around Baltimore. It was a typical bypass. And what you did is you simply went around this bypass, and you're supposed to bypass all of the area. Well, what I did is, here's the road. Huh? The bypass went this way. I got on the bypass on this side of it. So I came all the way back where we had just been. And there was a toll booth there. So we paid our toll, went through, got on the bypass, came all the way back. And I said, another toll booth? Same toll booth. Same toll booth attendant. Same truck sitting on the side of the road, broken down, saying, Baltimore or bust. I thought, this is rather coincidental. Ding, 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 ding. Well, we had just made a big circle, and we were headed finally in the direction we should have. Children of Israel, wilderness journey. I don't know why they call it a journey. You know, journey generally has some point of departure and point of, yeah, they just wandered. I'd rather just call it the wanderings of the wilderness. 40 years because of whining. Now, right now you're a certain age. Add 40 years to that. You want to take that much time out of your life? Keep whining. Keep complaining about what God has supplied to you logistically. He supplied food. They didn't like it. He supplied water. They didn't like it. They had a diet of quail. I have run all over the country trying to get quail, and they had it on a daily basis. Now we have it as a vice president. They had food that was so nutritious, and it came to them fresh every day. They said, we hate it. God gave them a leader. They despised him. The result? Their carcasses fell in the wilderness. That's the result. What happened here? Well, tomorrow you'll know, he says. And so they assembled themselves together. And the Lord said in verse 20, Moses, Aaron, verse 21, separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them instantly. Now, do you think they've gotten their answer? You think that this might have put a little encouragement in Moses? Do you think automatically it would have discouraged any further conspiracy? Don't hold your breath. Do you think that the others watching this would say, hey, we've been following the wrong people. We've been misled. No, no. No, no. Verse 24, tell the others to stay clear of the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And so they did. Depart from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing that belongs to them, lest you be swept away in all their sin. Very important principle. I wish I had another hour, but we'll have to wait till Tuesday for this. And this is sin by association. And this is condemnation by association. Listen to me. God tells us to flee even the appearance of evil. He also tells us to separate from those
that appear evil. And if you know that anything's going on that's wrong, unlawful, sinful, whatever, you'll get caught up in that and you'll suffer the consequence, even though you may have been completely innocent. These others were told to clear out. Don't touch anything they own. Don't even go near their tents, because judgment was coming. Were they innocent? Sure. What would have happened if they said, well, you know, Abiram is one of my buddies. Dathan, I've known him since he was a child. I'll stick by him to the end. He'd have been consumed also. Because you see, conspiracy always draws with it the innocent who are unfortunately victims, and in many cases die as a result. Don't ever think that innocence is justifiable when you know that something is going on, or ignorance. If you're aware of the fact that somebody's involved in some unlawful deed, it's even in the statutes of the state of Arizona. You can be guilty by association. If somebody tells you of a crime, you're an accessory. Did you know that? And if the crime in fact is committed, it's after the fact. And you can be prosecuted. If you are a driver of a vehicle and you're aware of the fact that a crime is going to be committed, and in the commission of that crime, a life is taken, and murder charges of, say, second degree are charged against the perpetrator, you as the driver are also guilty of second degree murder by association. I would think that at this point, you would recognize the fact that you as believers have two options: cursing by association or blessing by association. I think you would take the latter very quickly than the former. You jump on that blessing factor, which means hang around with those people who can bless you, not curse you. Some of you pride yourself in your friends. What about these friends? Are they a blessing to you, or can they only bring you down? Think about it. I guess that would have been a good challenge for the kids in both Arkansas and... But we're all kids. Why? Because we have friends that are not good for us. Right? You say, not me. Well, then you might be the friend of somebody else. You didn't like that, did you? That's okay. That's what I'm here for, to make him mad at me. But just don't whine. Verse 28, and Moses said, by this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these deeds, for this is not my doing. If these men die the death of all men, in other words, if they die just the way regular people die, then... But, verse 30, if something entirely new comes about, something you've never seen before, something that people normally don't die of. Verse 31, then it came to pass that he was finished speaking these words, that the ground that was under them split open, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, and their households, and all the men who belonged to Korah with their possessions. And they died. Now, was that a strange thing? You remember where they were? How many earthquakes have you heard of out in the middle of the desert? A few, right? But is this just coincidental? He says, all right, Korah, get your boys ready. Tomorrow morning, if you die the regular way, in other words, if you die of old age, I can't say, well, see, the Lord took him. You know, if you wait long enough, you could say, yeah, see, he died.